Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlotnik. Today it is my distinct pleasure and a privilege to welcome Matt Larson. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
I very much appreciate you coming on board. Could you tell us a little bit about you? I'm going to do a quick intro. We've been working together for a long time at this point. We've done so many loans with you. You are one of the best of the best. If you remember watching that movie, Best of the Best. One of the best of the best people that we've been working with. We've certainly enjoyed working with you. You're so well organized. Your team is phenomenal. It's been a great experience. So, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and you're in the Quad Cities. Could you talk a little bit about Matt? You have a family. What are you doing in Quad Cities? How did you wind up there? A couple of words about you.
Okay. So I've been in real estate now for 14 years, and I got started in 2005, right before the top of the market, and been going ever since. I'm going to tell you a little story in a little bit as far as how I got into kind of turnkey sales, but just a little bit about me. Been in the business 14 years. I have a pretty big staff. We're located in Davenport, Iowa, which is part of the Quad Cities, and I have about 40 people in my office, and we do several hundred deals a year, and have for a really, really long time. I've probably done over 4,000 deals total in those last 14 years. And this is
amazing, by the way. That is amazing.
Thank you. And it's not just the Quad Cities. I only focus in the Quad Cities right now, but in the past, I've done deals in 9 different states and all over the place. So, but I really like the Quad Cities. Now, I grew up in the Quad Cities. My parents are from the Quad Cities. So I have moved around a little bit. I lived in Michigan for a while. I lived in St. Louis for a while. I lived in Scottsdale, Arizona for a while. But I always kind of trend back to the Quad Cities because there's a lot. I kind of like the area. It's a small, about 450,000 people in Quad Cities. It's a Midwest town located, in Iowa. Smaller, people ask me all the time, what the heck is the Quad Cities? And I always say, hey, you ever heard of a company called John Deere? And everybody has. And their world headquarters is here in the Quad Cities, along with the largest armory in the country, the Rock Island Arsenal. So I like the Quad Cities. I like the simple living in the Quad Cities. You got a very good base of people that are just kind of hardworking country people. Although our city has grown, the Quad Cities is actually, there's Davenport, Iowa, there's Bettendorf, Iowa, and then on the Illinois side, we're right on the Mississippi River here. So on the Illinois side, there's Moline, Illinois, and Rock Island, Illinois. And there's just a lot of other little smaller cities that kind of go along with that. You got East Moline, and you got Silvis, and a few other smaller cities around that kind of make up the Quad Cities. But I like the people. This is the type of area you're going down the road and people wave at you. Real estate's really cheap here, although one of the benefits of the Quad Cities and why I like it as far as why I do turnkey real estate is because the real estate's cheap, but the rents are actually very strong compared to the price of the houses. So, I like that. And that was one thing I could not find in these other, during the last downturn. I was in Kansas City. I was in St. Louis, Detroit, Minneapolis, did some stuff in Alabama, Chicago and several other areas. And the Quad Cities just kept attracting me because it seemed insulated from the rest of the world. And what I mean is when the market crashed in 08, 09, a lot of these other areas that I was working in, their values had dropped in half or more. And the Quad Cities never saw that. We saw about a 7% drop on top line values of houses. And the saying kind of goes around the Quad Cities. The other piece I like is it is so well insulated and it does so well during downturns that it's become a banking haven. And they say that the Quad Cities is, you know, one of the strongest banking markets in the country. I think it, last time I heard it was like ranked the top, like 11th in the country for where banks like to do business, because, and the reason that is because the property values have been safe. Now, you won't get heavy appreciation. You know, we get 2-3% a year. We're pretty happy with that. And so, I like the low crime. You know, you'll never drive a neighborhood. Go to the worst neighborhood in the Quad Cities. You drive that neighborhood, you won't see any central air units with the big metal cages and locked up and all that. You just don't see that here. So there's a lot of little benefits, and that's kind of why I've always gravitated towards the Quad Cities. And it just so happened that I was born in an area that happens to be the best rental market you could ever hope to dream for. So that's kind of the rundown there. How I kind of got going there.
That's great. That's a phenomenal introduction. So two quick comments. It's a home sweet home. So you grew up there and you went away and then you came back realizing that there is nothing better out there for you. Just, you know, tastes different folks, different strokes for different folks. I certainly appreciate the fact that it is a steady Eddie market. And being in a steady Eddie market, it's great for folks who live there. It's great for you who you provide a service for the community. One of the most important benefits, you take older homes and you renovate them and you make a great, improved, better home for somebody else to live in. And you sell them as a turnkey and you rent it to somebody to have a better living. And it improves community. So I think you love the city and you do good things for the city, kind of to help the Quad Cities, to help them be a better place for folks. But from an investment perspective, the steady Eddie market without wild fluctuations up and down. When the market is up, everybody is high. When the market starts going down, they're all depressed. And not having that volatility is a big deal. I have to say that most of the coastal cities have got, and not just coastal cities, but there are many markets around the country where this volatility makes people nervous today because the economy can slow down. So what do you see just going forward? You see the steady Eddie continue, that the market, even if there's some kind of recession, we are unlikely to see any kind of correction in the Quad Cities. You think it's going to do very well in a down market?
Yeah. It's funny because these are really good questions. And one of the things that I've seen a lot over the last, you know, 2-3 years, it seems like kind of gurus are coming out of the woodwork. And a lot of these guys have only been doing real estate a few years and all of a sudden they kind of know everything. And I'll be the first one to tell you that I started before the last peak, went through the downturn and back up to where we are. And I feel like I've got a lot of experience, but I still don't think I can really predict when this next downturn is going to hit. Now, I can tell you that I thought it would have been already done by now. I don't think that we're going to see the type of downturn that we saw in 2008, but I really thought that we would have seen a downturn by now. But I also didn't predict, you know, Donald Trump to get elected as president either. And, you know, love the guy or hate the guy, he's kind of on a little bit of run with this economy and he's kind of business friendly. And so I'm not saying everything he's doing right now is perfect. But so I guess to answer your questions is I think, you know, depending on whether or not he gets reelected, that's the teeter totter that I see is what will predict what happens next. Now, I think that if he gets reelected, I think that this bull run in real estate and the economy in general, stock market, I think it's going to keep going. Now, you know, if he doesn't, I think we'll see a crash, not maybe as bad as what we saw in 2008, but I think it'll start and within a couple of years, it'll get bad. And that's just kind of my thought. I can't predict the future, but that's why I have, you know, again, I hate to keep kind of harp on where I live, but one of the reasons I picked the place that I hold hundreds of rental properties. So I not only sell turnkey, but I hold a lot of properties for myself. And I do that in the Quad Cities because I don't know everything and I can't predict the future. All I know is that I can look in the past and say, you know, every time we've had a downturn in the economy in recent history, I've done pretty well on my houses. And if I ever decided to sell them all out, I don't want to have to predict the perfect market peak in order to do that. So I kind of hedge my bet against the fact that I know the market's going to crash. We all know that that's going to happen. When it happens, I'm not sure. But when it does, I want to be positioned in a place that I'm not going to get destroyed. You know, in the last downturn, you know, I owned some properties in the downturn and did really, really well during that downturn when in a lot of people in a lot of parts of the country really did get hurt. So I don't know. I mean, I think that, I think it's coming. I think it'll be here someday. In the meantime, I'm going to keep running my business like I always have. I'm going to make smart investments. I'm going to buy houses that make sense today and that cash flow today. And as long as I keep those fundamentals straight, I think that, you know, I'm pretty safe. And that's the advice I would give to anybody that's buying a lot of real estate right now, is just make sure you're making good decisions for today and not hoping for what'll happen tomorrow.
That's great feedback, Matt. That's great wisdom. I certainly agree with you. The cash flow element, sort of cash flow is the king. These assets generate good cash flow and you can hold them through any kind of recession. I mean, that's a fundamental concept. If you can do well from a cash flow perspective, it doesn't really matter if the house on paper is 100,000 and now it becomes 95,000, becomes 90,000. But your market is unlikely to even go through serious correction on paper. Plus, the type of assets that you invest in, these turnkey houses, probably most affordable part of the market. They really work very well as a first-time homeowner residence, or they can work very well as an investment property. That's why that's such a good product. So what kind of a rent-to-value ratio, this is the typical RV, do you see in your markets? Most of the properties you sell as turnkeys. What is the typical rent? What is the typical price that you sell them at?
Yeah. So what I focus on is I focus on the starter homes, just like you kind of just said. You know, we don't go towards the high parts. You know, every single market has a starter home price range, right? If you're in the Quad Cities, that starter home price range is, you know, 75,000 to 125 grand. If you're in San Francisco, that might be starter homes might be, you know, $800,000-$900,000. So I start where the largest majority of people can afford those homes. And that way that they're always easy to sell. You know, anytime that you've got a starter home, there's always a market for that. So we focus on buying properties in that $75,000 to $125,000 price range. Those houses rent for, you know, $800 to, you know, $1,300-$1,400. And we're always in that, you know, the old 1% rule. We're always at or exceed that number. And, you hear a lot about, especially Illinois right now. Illinois is kind of getting beat up a little bit. But I'll say that, you know, the Quad City's a little insulated on that. You know, we're right on the river. So the Iowa side and Illinois side are both kind of joined. And, you know, we don't see super high taxes on the Illinois side. Iowa side taxes are a little bit cheaper. I like that part of it. But you've got the same work base renting those houses. Every single day, if you look at the bridge, you know, there's people from Iowa driving into Illinois to work, and there's people from Illinois driving into Iowa to work. So it kind of shares. So, you know, we're just really focused on the starter homes, houses that have a high probability to rent, that we get good rent. We actually have seen a lot of good rent appreciation over the years as well. That's kind of another thing I like to look at. When I invest my money into a rental property, I want the first day that I own that property to be the worst performance it ever has. So if I buy that house and it cash flows me on, you know, 10 to 14% cash on cash return, And in 10 years, the rent is, you know, 30% higher through rent appreciation, then man, I continue to increase my profit and my margins on that property. And I'll tell you, you know, here a little bit about, you know, my very first property. The very first property I ever bought 14 years ago, it was a four unit building. And this property I paid $82,000 for. Okay. This is in 2005. And that in all four units combined, the total rent in this building was $990. Okay. 14 years, actually not quite 14 years later. I had it last summer. I had it appraised. So 12 years later, all four rents in that apartment building are now over $2,200 a month. And the building appraised for $164,000. So in a 12 year period, the rents over doubled and the value of the property doubled. So that's kind of what I'm focused on is not only, I like to see, I know that my property values are going to appreciate maybe 2-3%. And if my rental values do the same, then that's just a perfect best case scenario. That's the goal right there. That's what we're really shooting for is, you know, everything, you know, I put debt against the properties and try to finance it like 75% of the deal. And if in a 20 year period, that house pays off and the rent's doubled, I mean, the cash flow on something like that is just amazing. So that's kind of my personal strategy on what I'm looking for.
Matt, I think that's a brilliant point. I absolutely agree with you. The value growth of the rental properties is linked directly to the rent you collect. It's an income approach. Although these are residential properties, they don't trade on an income approach. They trade based on comps. Mm-hmm. But a lot of investors ultimately looking for cash flow.
Yep.
You're renting a 1% a month. That's why that RV of 1% makes a lot of sense because it generally, once you put 75% leverage at the cheap bank rate and you're starting with cash on cash, kind of the cap rate. I mean, you don't apply the cap rate approach, but in concept, after you're collecting 1% a month, you're collecting gross 12% a year. Again, 1% RV. So times 12 months, that's 12%. That's your rent collection relative to the value. You take it. You write off taxes, insurance, other expenses. You make, let's just say, 8-9%, and then you add 4.5% bank money leverage on that. Your cash on cash, you wind up in the low teens, and that's a great situation. And then that whole thing, sort of proportional to your ability to increase rents. So if your rent increased 2%, 2-3% a year, the values typically stick with it, right? I mean, if you take 3% over 10 years, it's 30% increase, then your value increases 30%. And if you add leverage on that, your leverage return gets magnified. So I'm with you. I absolutely like the concept. It makes sense. If you could push the rents up steady, that's why steady Eddy is a great thing for long term. There's no volatility. It's just, it's a consistent appreciation and consistent predictable cash flow. So what you said is music to my ears. I absolutely agree with you, and I appreciate you sharing. It's a remarkable market. And on top of that, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about how you do your rehabs, because we've had as a lender to you on these fix and flip projects, you've been incredibly consistent. I mean, you turn them in typically less than 4 months. You have very well-organized business, and you execute the rehab work, and you're able to put in a tenant fairly quickly, and then lease the property, you know, sell a lease property or add it to your portfolio. So the question is, how do you execute in 3-4 months full cycle? It's a remarkable execution.
So Mike, what we do is we focus heavily on the we focus heavily on project management. Okay, so one of the challenges over the last, one of the challenges over the last year, 2 years has been labor. You know, I don't care where you're at in the country. The labor pool has really, really, I mean, it's dried up. Everybody that wants to work is working. And, you know, so we've had to focus heavy on just finding the right project managers. Now, once you find the right, it's literally the key. So, we focus on finding the right project managers that understands construction, that's very, very detail oriented and very process driven. So, you know, this is kind of like one of those things that you really don't hear a lot of people talking about, but it's literally probably the most important piece. A lot of times people just think, hey, find the right, just find a contractor, just find somebody that's got experience and, you know, put them on the job. And really that's not what I've discovered as the secret to the success. You've got to have somebody that's running these projects that shows up every day with a specific plan in place for that project, meets with the GC that's on that running that rehab. And, you know, we have this routine that we do. The project manager gets there, you walk the inside of the downstairs, you walk the inside of the upstairs, you walk the garage, and you walk the exterior. And you have a specific series of questions to ask in order to make progress on this project. You know, we find out, hey, where's the, you know, what's the timeline to finish the rough on electrical, plumbing, HVAC? Where are we at finishing the interior, regardless of what stage it is, you know, hey, what do you have left to do on the interior and a specific timeline to what has to be done the next time that project manager shows up, which is the next day. Very, very important. We're at every single project every day with a specific plan. So for example, when you could be one of the projectors could walk into the property and say, hey, you got, looks like you're ready to set cabinets. When I get here tomorrow, will you have all the cabinets set? And you want to get a verbal confirmation that contractor, yes, my plan is tomorrow, I'm going to get here in the morning, I'm going to set the base cabinets, that we're going to move to the uppers, then we're going to put the countertops in place. So we set specific guidelines for every single GC on every project every day. That's the only way you can get a project to the finish line. So we have had a really good track record of finishing projects quickly, and that's the secret. I've seen really bad project managers work with amazing contractors, and the job never gets done. Because if that project manager that's leading that rehab doesn't show up with a plan every day, that project manager will hesitate. They'll have periods of, hey, I don't know what to, you know, I need help. I need this question answered. And they try to get a hold of the project manager. Project manager doesn't respond quick enough. They might need a specific material or whatever it is. And if that project manager doesn't respond quickly and doesn't give them the direction they need, that even that amazing contractor will fail. So we have a specific plan we follow every day, and that's the key to it. Because right now you will see, you know, you're going to see a lot of contractors that they're loaded down. They have 3 or 4 months of work. But if you can prove to them that you're easy to work with and you show up every day with a plan, they actually like it and they actually get more done. And most people just don't want to think. They just want to show up and work. And that's how we've been able to get a lot of this stuff done so fast.
That is a remarkable work blueprint. I have to say that I have not heard, I've heard all kinds of people in this business, but this is this one day at a time and the focus on the project manager. Is remarkably simple and remarkably brilliant. So I certainly concur that when folks have accountability and then they commit to something and then you show up next day and tell them how things are going, you said your kitchen cabinets are coming up, have you accomplished the task? And you're not pushing on them, you're not beating on them, you're just checking in what they committed to. And I'm sure on a case, circumstances when there's some kind of a delay, it'll take them an extra few hours. But in general, this thing works. It's a little bit of micromanagement, but at the same time, it's clarity. So folks, you're right, they don't have to think. And then a great project manager will keep active pace. I guess they have a plan on each project almost day by day, because you're running an execution. What's an average rehab time? Is this about a month? How long does it take you to rehab? And do you have almost a daily plan? Is that generally the approach, or you have a weekly plan? That, how detailed do you go?
First of all, when we first start the project, we start out with what we call a project plan and budget. And we send one person from our team. So as soon as we close a house, we send a specific person from our team, and we blueprint the house. Okay, we take a laser measure. We measure every room. We then transfer all those measurements into a CAD, like a blueprint. It really doesn't take that long. So now we start with a blueprint, and we have a specific plan for that house and scope of work. Now that takes a couple, 2-3 hours for this guy to create that scope of work, but it's amazing. People don't take that 3 hours, let's say, when they close on a house. They just, you know, grab their tools and start working, right? And that they think that, hey, you know, I don't want to spend the hours to get this project ready to go. I would rather just get started. And that 3 hours saves us 3 months on the backside. So we create this specific project plan, and then we start executing. If you look in my conference room, we actually have it's like 47 steps to finish a rehab. Literally, it's like a little chart we've created, step one, step two, step three, and we just follow this along, and we know what should happen next, and we know, you know, who's responsible, and we know how to keep these guys in check. And you have to be, you know, I tell my project managers, I'm like, hey, if you're best friends with the GC, you're probably not pushing them hard enough. They should feel a little nervous when you walk up that you may not be, you know, perfectly happy with everything that they have accomplished. So, you know, our job is to make sure when you show up that they expect, and we expect them to live up to the plan. And if they don't, you know, we have to have a pretty tough conversation with them. And the other piece of it is I know when I start a contractor, this is the statistics. We call five contractors to bid a project. Only 2 to 3 will show up. Out of that 2 to 3, only 1 to 2 will give you a bid. And out of that 1 to 2 that'll give you a bid, one of the bids won't even be in the ballpark. The other bid will have to work with the GC a little bit to dial in the price. Now, the guy that wins the bid will not likely make it to the next project. We know these statistics. We're prepared for the ratio up front. So everybody always gets so upset, man, I hired a bad contractor and you're not doing this and that. Just know that that's the ratio. And so we know when that contractor finishes that project, if he's not amazing, we exit. So what happens over time is you end up hiring a lot of contractors, and some of them finish the project and we don't want to give them another project because they didn't follow our rules. And at the end of a 6-month period, you end up with the cream of the crop. Our side of things is we got to pay these people fast. And we've got to live up to whatever payment plan we've set up. Typically, we do 25, 50, 75, and 100. But if our job is to make sure they get paid. Our job is also to make sure that they don't ever have to do advertising and go bid 50 jobs to get one. We have unlimited work. So we want to make sure they're paid. We want to give them enough work. And if they're good, we'll keep them busy. Their job is follow our timeline. Do what we tell you you're going to do, show up every single day with a plan and what you're going to get accomplished. And I've literally, Mike, over the years following this kind of this process, I've taken average Joes that weren't that good and turned them into superstar contractors because they followed the system. I've had 25-year veterans. You know, when I show them a house and like, hey, you should be able to knock this house out in 3 to 4 weeks. And they laugh at me. Man, I've been doing this for 25 years. I'm a contractor for 25 years. There ain't no way possible you will get this house done in 4 weeks. And I say, hey, let's take a trip over to this other house we have going. I want to watch these guys work. And their jaw will drop. And then 3 months later, these guys are doing the same thing. Matt, I've been a contractor for 25 years. I never knew I could do this much done. It's all about the plan.
Matt, that is brilliant. I have to say that, first of all, that's why we've been working so successfully for so many years, because you guys execute, our guys execute. We follow checklists, we follow process, and you do exactly that. This is just amazing to hear it from you. You're so well organized. You're executing on the plan day in and day out. And yes, of course, there's going to be plenty of people who do it the wrong way. It is just almost amazing that great management of these projects can make, you know, could plug in average contractors and run well. And if you plug in great contractors, which you screen out over time, you wind up with very, very efficient operation. Everybody gets paid on time. Projects get finished on time. You don't miss much. Most of your things execute so smoothly. And that's why you're successful, and that's why we love working with you. So I have to give you all the credit where it's due. And everything you said is just gold. Like, literally, you have some people teach, and you do. And they say those who teach can't do. You do. You execute so flawlessly. I was going to say you could be a professor and teaching this stuff, but probably you don't want to do. You want to do that. You want to focus on doing, succeeding in what you do rather than teaching how to do it. So,
yeah. And I will say this too, Mike, you know, again, I was telling you earlier, you know, you guys are, you know, we have been working with you guys for years and years and years, and you just make doing business so easy. My title company's always like, man, don't work with those guys over there. Work with Mike. You know, he's easy to work with. And I'll be honest with you and transparent, you know, you're not the cheapest money we work with, but we go with you guys because it's so darn easy. So we really appreciate everything that you guys do for us as well.
Matt, thank you kindly. We got to wrap up. I have the next call coming up. Would you please let folks know how to find you if they want to learn from the best, or they have any questions, or they want to buy a house from you? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way, just send me an email and I'll respond. My email is mlarson, LARSON, at easystreetprops.com. That's mlarson at easystreetprops.com, just PROPS at the end of Easy Street. And it's just spelled out easystreetprops.com. So that's the best way. If somebody's interested in a property, we'd more than, would love to have a chance to serve and see how well we can do for you. And we'll take any of those opportunities we can get.
Thank you. Thank you kindly. I greatly appreciate you coming on the podcast. Love the episode. Thank you so much. Have a great day. And love working with you. So I appreciate your wisdom and all your brilliance. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Mike. I really appreciate being on.
Thank you, man. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot in. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.